Yeah. Господи,
Oh, yeah.
Geri dola gecü civada, midirli ve gedan devada, kümbar rüce püdoldu. Taci dinya dindindili, yuzacı bici cüce medoda, riran ici nilegi. Sanci cidu midirli ve yedugu, cübaycu idamı guru ratna mandela. Niyanda ya mi sanje je da do je jo nam na ja jo ba do na ne ja ta ge chu ju ge ve so nam je ro
sanje do ba ro
sho sanje je da do je jo nam na ja jo ba do na ne ja ro Dāgī chūyū nīvē tōnām jīn rōnām sāngjīn rō gārāyū sāngjī chūyū dōjī chūnām dājā chūpādām dāni jāp Dāgī chūyū nīvē tōnām jīn rōnām
sāngjīn
rō gārāyū
Good morning to everyone.
Hatarin de manzo ani mixe gida mixe ching lots in chat yores.
This is a special teaching and we are here today for a special kind of a gathering, if you will.
태양 아니지 낭전에다 시에베 아니지 나 아니 생감 다시 그 거를
And I've decided to speak on to, mind and Buddhism. How do we understand mind as explicated
teachings. 네 셰셰베 다 나스 생각을 그랬다 다 토나진이 마음을 마음을 용요요레스
let me give you a context why I decided to speak on to mind and Buddhism. As you may already know that in this day and age there are a number of what called scientists and intellectuals who have begin to take interest in understanding human mind and what it is, its nature, different types of mind, their functions, etc., which are presented in Buddha's teachings.
하바도 아니 지금 어린나다 지금 들은 랍도던데 아니 레베 관련 지금 도중 중이 근데 그 돈에야 랍도 가셔 돈을 랍도 나려야 근데 먼저 두두 장아야 랍도 가셔 나려야 근데 세종 구리성이 저거 양 근데 나래 생강 토려야 양 즉 셰야 나 전에 근데 근데 이것도 또 셰야 양 세종들의 소쇼도 진짜 더 나은 거 예서를 써서
So as a part of that kind of a development which has taken place for a certain period of time, as we tour around different parts of this country, at times we were invited to speak in different university classes, especially by like neuroscientists or the scientists who show interest in understanding what mind is.
So, 어 근데 선장다 통화 아니지 다 낭수네 아니 공부 방법 보야 책을 통해 공부 방법 보야 돼 이자로 퉁구여레스 근데 뒤야데 간절해서는 다자 동바란 게 아니지 개론 다가 개나게 쓰제다 쓰신다 레바달라 나야가 나와서 구진데 송번에 신 아니지 통화 아니지 시 제가 다 간다 장게 직 폐게 직도 직임도 쳐봐요 저 밑에 배쳐 컨텐츠이란 게 일이야 딱제시는 또가 약속이어스 대야 딱제시 대야 셀라 바 배차지 라라 셀지 고고이는 셀진 요고이나 셀야 양타와 인다메 어디 다제 전제 당부 셀때 아니 저 발라다르 당부들라 아니 니와들야 아니 셀다 파도 나로 견도면 또 아니 지 他是安尼送不得了呀，安是得买扎当的。他是得就过来，大家吃过呀，变得松松哟，是。嗯。当地安尼就南北，他就兄弟些些呗，安同安温州，安就中西国就新州国就，等在什么松温南的同安温州等不了呀，同嘛，我什么什么那玩意儿，安就中西国就等不了呀，安就外头这把个那玩意儿，新州国就等的等不了呀，安就农村，安就我去当。
And I feel that there are certain commonalities between how scientists approach their scientific research or investigation, and how Buddhists approach or investigate realities or phenomena. So in terms of approach, you know, scientists, they adopt what we call objective approach to investigate matters. So in the same way in Buddhism, our historical teacher Shakyamuni Buddha has made it absolutely clear in his very famous statements, as Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory. And Buddha said, "Kelong dagam kenam ki, O monastic scholars and what we call wise men, means regular scholars. Just as a goldsmith adopts three ways to test whether the gold is a real gold or not. And the three tests, of course, in olden days done are, they would rub the gold against something, say whether it's a fake or the real one. They would cut it and they would burn it so that through these methods they find whether the gold is a real gold or not. In the same way, Buddha said, you should investigate my teaching by way of what is called three types of analysis, which could be done by adopting what are called three valid cognitions. The Tibetan term is called tsemasum, three valid cognitions. And these are direct valid cognition, or ngusum tsema in Tibetan, inferential valid cognition, which is called cheba tsema in Tibetan, and then there is what is called yichu tsema, which is inferential valid cognition that is based upon what is called authenticity of statements, if you will. And so how do we use these three valid cognitions to investigate realities or phenomena, if you ask? With regard to what we call manifest phenomena, or the phenomena which are more like obvious to our sensory perceptions, then Buddha said that we need to apply direct valid cognitions, to find out whether what exists is real or authentic or not. So we use direct valid cognitions to approach realities which are accessible to our sensory perceptions, if you will. But then there are phenomena or realities which are what we call slightly concealed or hidden from us. Okay. And this is where we need inferential valid cognitions, which is based upon rationale or reasoning to be able to understand and approach such hidden realities, if you will. Now, within the hidden realities of phenomena or concealed phenomena, there are certain categories which are very subtle, if you will, you know. And such realities or phenomena could be accessed or understood by way of relying upon what are called authentic statements, made by enlightened beings, and so which is also a kind of inferential valid cognition, but at a very subtle level. Okay. So Buddha basically said, so you can adopt the three valid cognitions and apply them in your analysis and examination. Through that approach of the method, when you find my teachings are valid and authentic, you know, they stand by the test that you run through, then you accept them. But do not simply accept my teachings out of faith and reverence and respect. Okay. So this Buddha statement is a very objective statement. You know, he provided us a very rational, objective approach to look at realities and phenomena. And I think this is exactly what the scientists would find it very acceptable, right? You adopt what we call objective approach to investigate realities and phenomena.
Oh, then just on that, I was like,
So just as, you know, scientists would not simply take everything for granted, or somebody says so, it is, so it's B, you know, they said, yeah, maybe, likely, there's a possibility, I don't know, you know, we have to do investigation and find out, is it the way you said it is, you know, they won't say, yeah, I believe you, so it is, okay, I take that one, no, they are going to, you know, investigate and do research. Okay? So in the same way, Buddha told us that we must investigate his teachings. You know, Buddha gave us the complete freedom to investigate his teachings. He did not say, you know, okay, I'm a Buddha and I said so, so you take it. Okay? He didn't make such statement, and he never imposed anything on us. So if we are to adopt what is called that kind of an approach that Buddha laid out and that the scientists are also upholding, you know, to be able to do that, we really need to have what called unbiased attitude. Okay? And so that's why it becomes very important for us to study, you know, mind and different types of mind and their functions, to be able to be unbiased the way we relate to phenomena or things, the way we approach things. We have to study the mind. You know, we cannot also make a claim that, you know what, this is what we Buddhists have talked about, you know, in our teachings, so therefore all of this must be true. Okay? Then that could be Buddhist bias. Okay? So we really have to understand different types of mind and how could we be unbiased in our attitude and approach to things and to realities. So both scientists and Buddhist scholars accept that we must, you know, bring unbiased attitude in our investigation and examination, that we must adopt objective approach to things, to realities. But as we engage in our investigation, maybe the methods we use are very different. Of course, as you know it very well, that scientists have all kinds of, you know, technology, you know, that they use in their research to be able to investigate matters and the things they, you know, study. So scientists are very much into, you know, measuring things, you know, the length, the breadth, the depth, you know, the size, whatever it is, you know. And they use statistics to do the analysis, and so they can make predictions, and they can test their, you know, hypothesis, if you will. But of course, Buddhists, you know, we, you know, use different method here. We don't, you know, have technology, and we did not develop technology to look into mind. Yeah. So what we do is, you know, we say, okay, let's kind of look inside ourselves, you know, think inwardly, and see what kind of experiences that we have, you know. So we work with our experiences. You know, are our experiences authentic and valid, or are these kind of a distorted experiences we have? So the Buddhist, you know, way of examining things is we rely upon our own mind to investigate the mind, and our own experiences to look, you know, to understand a mind.
Tangote, see that Syrigal ya and Tetan Namda Mango Yoteris, taken an that Syrig Tetan, Kantechita, and Namshuni, and Jawa Yumi. Tangote. And you were the Anijik Tetan Tadag, that Namshulia, and it's a Tona Chakoya, Gobakari. And it's Syrig da Namshuni Tonet, and Yamku Tonet, me you saw the Karasung Yumi. And Tineta Namshu Tonet, and it's Sendan, the Namsha.
So some of the things that I hope to cover in today's meetings is, you know, because in science there are many different branches, okay? So what kind of scientists or what branches of science, you know, seem to be taking interest in understanding what mind is? Okay, and so why are they started to take interest in this, if you will? And what are some of the common aims and objectives that both scientists and Buddhist scholars could pursue together? Okay. And of course, then more importantly, in a sense, that we are going to talk about the Buddhist perspective on mind, its types, and you know, its functions.
Mango yue nane, tin nane, so de taji, nangshu dang, java chanyig, and chiri de, and chi na, chik, sengarik, and chik chiri, leve chiri, dujin chame chiri, what da da da, nangshu, and java chago yoris.
So among the scientists, I think psychologists have, of course, you know, interest in understanding what mind is. That shouldn't be a surprise to us, right? You know, that is their field of focus, if you will. And I think the neuroscientists also, who are dealing with the brains and such things, they also, you know, are interested in understanding mind, what is mind, or you know, what is influence on brain system, if you will, things like that. And then there are also the atomic scientists, you know, who deal with the particles and such things. You know, they are also interested, you know, a Buddhist, you know, understanding of matter and a mind and the relationship between, you know, matter and mind.
What then just on that? Do you think to send an echeja, you know, the Langshin, the Kajo in the Taga Costa, the Sukhin, and Chick Tukin to Tanga, and Tami Turb to say get Dunin, Tukin Yoris, Song Yoris, Tian, shoot that take a papig.
So many particle scientists, you know, they're interested in Buddhist, you know, description of certain particles. For example, great Indian Buddhist sage scholar Vasubandhu in his Treasury of Knowledge, Abhidhamma Kosha, talks about matter at quite a certain length and detail. So he also talks about subtle particles, like 8 different kinds of particles, things like that. And so scientists are very much interested in the Buddhist perspective on matter and subtle particles. And then when you go at a very high level of Buddhist looking at realities, when we say from the middle way school point of view or the Madhyamika school point of view, we said, as we investigate in a matter or things, in the final analysis, nothing is findable. Okay? And nothing is findable. As we thought, that something is findable and something exists with a fixed nature and entity, but when we investigate, at the end of the analysis, we realize we couldn't find it. Okay? Now, I have also understood that a number of scientists also, particle scientists, come to the same reality. You see, they investigate the matter, energy at a very subtle level. At the end, they don't see anything that is substantive. There is nothing, that you can say, okay, here are the matter really. There's just some kind of form of energy exists there. There's nothing you can cling on to. Okay. But then, of course, most of the scientists say, that seems to be the case. They don't say, this is a conclusive evidence here. Now that's just likely. At the end, there's nothing. But then the Buddhist scholars are actually a step further away from that. Not only do we say that in the final analysis, things are not findable, but we say, that does not in any way harm the notion or the idea that things still exist. Things exist as, mere terms and concepts. There is no real substance to the things. They simply conventionally exist as mere labels. That's the is to it. No more, no less. Okay? So in the analysis, final analysis, we don't find anything, but that does not mean now things don't exist at all. As a matter of fact, things do exist. So I think that seems to be a Buddhist, the strength, where we say, when you investigate the matters, and we say, do the things exist just the way we thought they exist? They don't. We don't find it. But they do exist. Okay? They do exist as mere labels or mere terms. Yes.
와 다때네 다지 그게 아니 이제 세력배 다지 대생 근데 단대대 레베 세력다 아니 이제 생강게 세력 속에다 낭줄이야 아니 이제 더나 최고배 아니 거봐 가라스는스 아니 이제 그게 다지 샘다 아니 시버스니 되게 다지 뭐 아 첼레 배지 싸웠다 아니 야채워지 다시 집집에 대셔다 속주지만 더 저기 사바탄 갸체워지 대셔견 갸토야 카보치고 여레스 스페나 미기 숙통 대상가 공해 남시에게 유직다 아 유직벌했대네 도시 창네 아니 비결이야 아니 저 랑도게 다 그러지 네 아니 저 와도 저 차와치단 도서 아니 저 도서 레베 타네 다 저 그게 아니 저 다 유직 리윤데 당 레제 그 타네 다 저 그게
I think one of the good reasons why many scientists, especially neuroscientists and maybe psychologists, they're interested in Buddhist perspective on mind, etc. is because, especially the scientists, they try to explain everything through the brain system, how the neurons are fired in the brain system, and that's how we perceive things, we hear things, and all of these things. Everything is explained based upon, the neurons and the matter. Yeah. And so, yes, to a certain extent, things could be explained that way, but I think that has its own limitations. And but one of the major limitations is we say, okay, this is how we humans perceive things. We hear sound, whatever. But then they can't, based upon that approach, tell us what to do or what not to do so much. Or in terms of what we call the practice of abandonment and adoption or the cultivation. Okay. Whereas in the Buddhist perspective on mind, there is this detailed explanation about mind, different types of mind, you know, nature of mind, functions of mind, how different types of minds interact with each other. This whole complex system being explained, and you know, fine details are given how we, let's say, when our visual consciousness or eye consciousness perceives a form or an object, you know, what are the different types of mind, if you will, are involved to perceive that object? And when we say that, okay, I see an object and I understand it in a particular way, its colors, its whatever distinctive features, you know, what are the things involved in this whole process of determining what we are seeing in the object, etc.? So there's a whole lot of explanation provided in Buddhism. I think that becomes very kind of interesting and attractive to many scientists. Of course, scientists are also very curious to find out the different ways of looking at things, and you know, whether the Buddhist perspective could offer some new insight or understanding into the phenomena they themselves have been investigating, you know, and whether it could help us to understand different dimensional aspects of the things, etc. So I think those are the reasons why scientists are now, and many scientists are collaborating with Buddhist scholars.
What is that? That energy, Nangshub, Dang, that's it, big city. I'm thinking that's it, big Kavaso, energy, Zomne, energy, Kutu Mangushu, Sigurus, those of Kutu to that Chekwagan, Gobata, Mizo, the Karasinus, big Kutu Cheney, Nangjun, Sheve, Kyomaji to Guyamaris, Kutu Chigyamaris, Tawa Yumu Kutu Chigyamaris, Tanja Kimba Yumu Kutu Chigyamaris, those of Koyam, Mederis, Shekwag.
So you may already know that there have been a number of conferences, or what we call the meeting of the minds, if you will, or the meeting between East and West, whatever the labels are thrown out. But there have been many meetings between scientists and Buddhist scholars, you know, to exchange their views and understandings of matter and, mind. And of course, some of the common objectives, as I said, it's not like Buddhists are not interested to have a conversation with the scientists, so then they can find some kind of scientific explanation, say, you know what, okay, now the Nirvana does exist, okay, because, you know, science has some kind of proof here. Or maybe the enlightenment does exist, you know, omniscient mind does exist. Or maybe, you know, now we can say that there is life before and life after having a conversation with scientists. I mean, these are not, you know, part of the game, you will. This is not the aims and objectives of such meetings.
What the lesson is that go a make you so the person, and to draw a make it, and to summon and net on. And it's a lolia, and it's in a singing alia, and it's a gang a chain to gang it to learn, and it's a singing dinner, and don't need a dunk. Contagic top contagic dinner, and don't need a women.
So I think the common aim here is really to understand our own human, if you will, mind system, okay, better. And also because as human beings, you know, we go through a lot of mental stress. You know, there are different types of mind, you know, which bring us not so much happiness, but a lot of problems, you know. So if we can understand mind better, and then, you know, that will also provide us insight, how can we deal with stress that we go through, all the problems that are kicked out by different attitudes or the different states of mind.
Oh, the lesson that the anti kayu lai mezinala anti ne nazala sovato so che gange chain the na sing tone anti nazade kyoko chaya tandala and some.
So there is some kind of pragmatic reason for such a meeting between scientists and Buddhist scholars. Like, you know, when we go through all kinds of health issues, what sometimes really seems to accentuate our health issues and problems is because of our mental attitude and the way we look at things. Okay? So if we understand our mind better, maybe although we have this physical difficulty or a pain, you know, we may be able to invest more in the what we call the strength of our mind, you know, the power of our mind, so that it takes over the physical pain and difficulties and life is a little better. Okay, so there's a pragmatic reason also, you know, why such conversations are taking place between Buddhists and scientists.
Oh, then that's when some go make it so what it, go make it, and it's a pentatrop yet, it's a yoris. Pentatrop down there, that's now sink it on it, and it's a gangy set of chiati, a set of chevala, a sink the catching what chapa yoris, sink and never.
So in a very broad, in a sense, that scientists and Buddhist scholars have this common interest: how can we, you know, better our humanity and, you know, serve the humanity better? Okay, because a lot of our issues and problems are more to do with our state of mind, mental attitudes, and things like that. So a lot of our problems really arise from within our state of mind. Okay? And so that means we really need to educate ourselves about our own mind and understand the world of mind, so that we will be able to cope better with such issues and the difficulties that we confront in our life. So now I'm going to present mind from Buddhist perspective. You will encounter many different kinds of terms that we use in Buddhism, which may be very foreign to the scientists. Okay? And so, for example, Buddhists talk about sem, which we usually translate as mind, or lo, as consciousness. Okay? And at times they are considered synonyms, if you will. And so we will talk about, in a very general exposition of Buddhist understanding of the mind, we can talk about the different types of mind or categories of mind, such as what we call sema, valid perceptions or valid cognitions, brahmana in Sanskrit, or the, you know, non-valid perceptions or cognitions, semin, just the opposite of the valid, if you will, and the wrong or the distorted perceptions called lokshe, right? These are the terms we encountered in Buddhism, which are very, you know, foreign or Greek to the scientists. And as we talk about these things, again, we are not talking about something exists outside us. This is what we experience in our everyday life. You know, we experience valid perceptions, we experience non-valid perceptions, we experience distorted perceptions, you know. So we are basically falling back onto our own mental experiences of everyday life to understand ourselves better, so that we will be able to understand, you know, things better.
Yes. nordu asamba lochman de je yong yores san to zo be je chiri utane le je ten ta te she kya thu ado do ajang ta khabores ge so so gin so ga nyam yong utane do go ma do je
For example, it is possible that a previous moment of one's mind, if you will, looking at a particular object is distorted moment or perception. But then due to change of circumstances and conditions, the subsequent moment of the same perception becomes what we call valid perception or correct perception, if you will. So this is very possible. So that's why we need to understand how perceptions work. Let me give you an example here. That in Buddhism, we talk a lot about different deluded states of mind, such as anger and attachment, right? We are attached to things which we find very attractive and we like, and we dislike and hate and get upset and angry with things we don't like. Okay? So when we perceive things, through anger and attachments, our perceptions are distorted, yeah? And we don't see the realities as they are. We only have distorted versions of the realities. But then due to change in circumstances or the conditioning factors or through our own efforts, whatever the case may be, as we cool down, you will see, well, now we started to realize our own mistakes, or we might even started to develop love and affection and caring for the same people a moment ago we hated so much, And so these kind of different states of mind are what we really go through and experience. I don't think, scientists could explain these things based upon the firing of the neurons or, all this kind of stuff. Because this is what we human beings really experience. So we really have to connect with the human experiences, and this need to be authenticated by the human experiences. We can't explain these things just through, some matter and a combination of matters.
What did you say that you think? And then they catch him, but chop it again, come to the carasinus. Then I'm just you, Quran and me. Sugun nedan de yago ji shen gu gu yor was sugun nedan ge en ji do zo cha she da ne na zo yago ma shen ba na ne en ge da je che a che to gu ma was ne ji ya ge en ji dan shin gu ma was she te shin do en ji ge ge na sen gang go to ne cha ma da che mi en ji lo shi sin de she wa zo zo ge en nam sha do zo shen go ya de en ge ge nam sha jin zo rang su su le na la en ya ne sha le en ke shin bu cha gu yo de de yo res
So just as a doctor needs to really know about the human anatomy to be able to understand the human physical ailments and how to diagnose sicknesses and treat them, in the same way for us as human beings and more as a practitioners, we really need to study our own mind. And our mind has different states, if you will, as I mentioned earlier. There are those perceptions of the states of mind which we have, which are valid, which are correct, which are unmistaken. And then there are, perceptions and states of mind which we have, which are distorted, which are mistaken, which are what are called non-valid. And so these are the things we experience in everyday life. And by understanding these perceptions of our own, that we will be able to deal with situations, issues much better in our everyday life.
What the lesson that that be? Che, semma da che lochi sinyen dozo kandar che lor liya ni pige kendam idin chor ye devo de yores. Pena ngaran zuye ni che china ge ni che ngowo kanche chi ne kol ya kenda kol ya ni.
Just as maybe we could see in the external worlds and phenomena that things you know, exists in sort of oppositional forces. There's something, you know, that exists, then something else could harm it or damage it, you know. So there are always, you know, those what we call paradoxes, if you will, all the things which exist in, how should I say, in antithesis to each other. And this is the same with our state of mind. Inside our mind, there are many states of mind, you know, which are distorted and which are mistaken and all that. But then there are other states of mind which are correct and which are valid, so that, you know, we'll be able to use the valid states of mind and the correct states of mind to counteract the distorted, distorted states of mind.
Yes.
So as we you know, study different states of mind, and then you said the lesson we learn is we understand that there are what we call lokshe, distorted states of mind. Yes, we should not rely upon them. The information they provide us are not the right information. Okay, and then we have the doubting minds. We call it thesum in Tibetan. Okay, these are also, you know, problematic state of mind. You don't rely upon doubting minds and you make decision. Okay. But then there are other valid states of minds and perceptions we have. This is where we invest in them and we rely upon the information provided by them.
Okay.
So at the deepest level in our mind or the psyche, if you will, the worst distorted state of mind that all of us have is called what usually we call self-grasping and grasping at self. Okay. It is a very distorted state of mind. And because of this culprit, if you will, that other distorted, you know, states of mind arise in us. So that's why we have attachment, we have anger, we have hatred, we have jealousy, we have arrogance, we have, you know, you just name it, you know, all other things. And all of these are what we call not reliable states of mind. Okay, these are all distorted states of mind. And for our own life as individuals, and for the community and the society we live in, you can see how much these distorted perceptions bring trouble. And these are the real troublemaker. Okay? And how much, you know, troubles are brought forth to one's own life and to the community and society because of grasping itself, attachment, anger, hatred, jealousy, arrogance, and, you know, and all of the above and more.
You know?
So all such distorted perceptions exist within each of our mind. Of course, you know, maybe here it's safe to conclude that none of us wants this. Okay? But the fact of the matter is they do exist in us. So they are causing a lot of troubles. Okay? And we cannot simply wish them away. We say, okay, I'm going to make some good prayers and nice wish-fulfilled prayer as if then they'll go away. No. You know? And we cannot, like, okay, I will do a lot of prostrations as if it's, you know, these prostrations will kind of like some kind of a, you know, kick this out of my system. No. Or maybe I'll lay out some more offerings, you know, at the altar as if, you know, then these things will somehow disappear from within our mind. No. Okay. So these are not the methods with which we can remove or get rid of such distorted states of mind from within ourselves.
What in this one's on Tedaga Mel's Yaka Tubdi? teta de nasing giting den yugo yores teta me also a gotap this nasing giting den tugu gu yores nasing giting den tugu gu indi tangje tige ngye bo ko me also a ketem ji chosin ye de yores yun ta tame de be shiro la sapa ani che khandar sing giting ne ani ta khandar de ke khandu tame de be shiro ta ta tame de be ani samasing de ta samande ke khandu chi a ta Anji ka do da, nga ye do zhe nye bo la, anji na seng ge do ne, anji chang ba da, anji ngi, nyam ni chi ne, do zhe me o su ba, tab tu, den gyur ma do shi, kan tab me de res.
So if those are the things that we could do are really not helpful to correct our distorted perceptions or get rid of them, and the things I mentioned is, you know, making offering at the altars, doing a lot of prostrations, and wishing that, you know, everything should be hunky-dory, and it's not going to be. So then what can we do, really, here? Is as I indicated, right, a while ago, that within our mind, we have different states of mind which are antithetical to each other. Okay. Because attachment, anger, hatred, grasping, this exists within us, not outside. Okay? And these are distorting our perceptions, experiences. Now we really need to cultivate other types of mind and perceptions which, you know, are antithetical to these perceptions or which can counteract these perceptions. That's the only way. And that should make perfect sense, you know. If the grasping itself, which is the real culprit, exists in us, it's distorting our experiences, right? Messing us our life a lot. Now we need to cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness, which is antithetical to the self-grasping, okay? So that we can really hope to knock out or get rid of the self-grasping, okay? That's the only way to do it. The problem exists in the mind. The solution should be found in the mind, not outside. Okay? And this is what we are talking about. And the wisdom realizing selflessness is a valid cognition, pramana. It is a sema. Okay? Because the wisdom realizing selflessness sees the reality as it is, it has not gone wrong in that matter, then the way reality is perceived by the self-grasping is gone wrong. Okay. So therefore, we could correct, not only correct it, but really eliminate self-grasping by way of cultivating, right, insight into, selflessness. Now, same thing with the other types of distorted perceptions of the minds that we have, such as jealousy and anger. Okay. Now, we can cultivate other types of minds, such as love and compassion, which are positive states of mind. They could counteract, you know, jealousy and anger. Okay? So this is the method, you know, provided in Buddhism, and this is what we learn. Because if the problem exists in the mind, the solution needs to be found in the mind.
Yes.
So what I said is, you know, because such problems exist within ourselves, the solutions must be found within ourselves to counteract them. Because external methods or the antidotes are not going to work. Now here is a good example. That when we are really so mad with someone, and we see that person as our enemy number one or whatever, we are really not happy to see this person. You know, the anger is boiling inside us, you know. Okay, so now this is getting too much, and we say, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, how to say, face about turn and take a walk. Okay, maybe that might help a little bit. You come back and you see the same person here, like, well, my gosh, it still brings back all the anger and animosity. Yeah. Or you might say, you know what, okay, this walk is not working really, because I see this person again, I'm going to run. I'll go to a bar and just drink like hell. Okay. So you kind of numb yourself, and during the duration that alcohol is acting upon you, you seem to be fine. Okay. So you kind of forget about anger and the dead human being or whatever. But as soon as the magic of the drink is over, again you run into the same human being and you're mad. So that means the problem still exists inside you. So all these external solutions are really not working, you know. And so that's the point I'm trying to make here. You know, we need to find a solution within our mind to counteract anger. So what the Buddhism is teaching us is that if anger is the problem that we have, then we really need to study and understand anger and all its disadvantages, you know, how it distorts our own perception. Okay, maybe we are really not being fair to this other person we see as enemy number one. Maybe the person is not enemy number one. Okay, we really distorted the perception completely here. Okay, and so we also need to focus on all other, you know, things, the problems brought forth by the angry state of mind. And on the other hand, we reflect upon the benefits of cultivating, you know, love, compassion, connection with, you know, connection with this human being. Okay, all the good things about doing that. So as we get more convinced that it's better to love this person, care for, right, that brings peace of mind to you and the relationship gets better, you know. So as we can get convinced, then this love and compassion and the positive attitudes or the perceptions we cultivate, they become more dominant, and now we can counteract anger. Okay, so this is the right way to deal with. This is the right solution to our problem, which is anger at this particular moment, right?
What did you say? That because the, and the chawa, and juksa ki shi, and the ne shi, what does that? And can you tell us? And the mungyu da, and the juksa guju, and shindo guju is the thing. What about the shi? Because yu chawa.
Of course, our perceptions arise in relation to their focus of the objects, if you will. Yeah. And so what I said earlier about the three valid cognitions, from another side, we can say that from Buddhist point of view, maybe the world of phenomena can be understood in three different types or three different categories. There are those what we call ngunjur, which are obvious or manifest, okay, as we might say things under your nose kind of thing. And then there are slightly concealed or hidden phenomena, okay, things are not really accessible to our senses or sensory perceptions. Then there are things which are very concealed or hidden from us. These are the languages, you know, used in the Buddhist literatures. Because those three types of phenomena exist, so we need three different types of perceptions to understand them, to relate to them.
What the yu mandawa sum yuvatala and the law samanju and the tanga and samamandawa and sum yu yoris?
Because three different types of phenomena exist, so that makes it possible for the existence of three different types of valid perceptions. Okay, relating to each particular category of phenomena.
What the tongue when you sing it in an answer, check no way. Check to your yard tongue yard that so cheeky. Over loss of a dinner, your own jaws are done for loss of what happens, or teach it in when you net it your risk when you move on. And it's jig pier, and it's jig lente, tongue, and it's jig midaba, a chamos in it, and it's jig jungse gojo.
Teaching So in the category of manifest phenomena or ngunjur in Tibetan, we can include all the visible forms that you know we see, such as this table. Okay, and so we don't really need to rely on rational and reasonings, you know, to perceive this table. Okay, because it exists here and we see it. Okay, so we could have valid perceptions of this table right in front of us. But then there are phenomena such as the impermanence. We cannot see impermanence with eyes, really, when we talk about subtle impermanence. Then what we really need is we need to rely upon reasons, right, rational, to be able to understand subtle impermanence. So that requires inferential valid cognition. So it's not a direct perception, you know, but it's inferential. You infer it based upon reasoning that there is such thing as subtle impermanence, or even what we call, to some extent, law of karma and its results. You know, we can't see, you know, with our eyes what karma is or its results. So we may need to reason it all out.
That's a Hindu that. 这个当作现在的呀，俺们这些吧，俺这送个台呗，俺龙来带呢，俺写过个药的，这送台呗龙，本来恰巧呢，俺金巴大呢，龙就中国药个的，金巴大呢，龙就中国的写完了，俺金巴的就肯这几个单元没，龙就的就肯这几个名个也没，都是白搭白，他人不当，俺这个团呢，这他先查我这种先做个文章的，先下的，俺这批个，俺这一几个。
And then there are, as I mentioned earlier, very hidden or concealed phenomena, we say that if you are generous, generosity leads to resources. Okay. Now if we ask the question, when did you do the generosity thing? And when will it bring its resources or the outcome? Now that gets very subtle, hidden phenomena. And the way to understand that kind of thing is by relying upon what we call valid statements, in the statements that could not have gone wrong in any sense, provided. So we develop conviction based upon those valid statements, and that conviction helps us to understand, you know, or assert the realities as they are. So those are the three different types of phenomena. They are the obvious phenomena or the manifest, such as the table, that we can see it with our senses without the need to rely on reasoning, rational. Then there are slightly hidden phenomena such as subtle impermanence. We need to reason it all out to understand what subtle impermanence is. So there is the inferential valid cognition kicks in. Then there are things like generosity leads to resources, and in my footnote, patience leads to beauty. Okay. To be able to really understand the validity of these things, we need to rely upon what are called valid statements, and that provides us the conviction, yiqi in Tibetan, to understand such realities.
我等着是在写经念诵有文章，有等着写经念诵有章，贴心一个，那怎么么着我诵的这里是当的？嗯，俺们我诵怎么？俺们这，从小过去呢，我都结巴，新的过去呢，一起个结巴，怎么？不是怎么诵都是一样的，怎么怎么啥，怎么诵的这里是的。So
that's why in the Buddhist, psychology, we use terms such as shaljasum, means three objects of comprehension, literally translating, which are basically manifest phenomena, slightly hidden phenomena, and very hidden phenomena. So because there are three objects of comprehension, so there have to be three comprehending perceptions or consciousnesses. So that's why we talk about direct valid perception, inferential valid perception, and then there's the inferential valid perception based upon valid statements, such as the conviction that we talk about.
So
So I simply kind of laid out the broad outlines. I said there are three, you know, types of object comprehension, three types of valid perceptions, of course. Now we need to really go more into the details, you know, as presented in the Buddhist, you know, teachings. I mean, I'll do my best, given whatever the time factor we have, try to go more into the details, you know, because valid perception is not just one, only one kind. There are many different, you know, within it. You know, we could see divisions, if you will.
What do you think?
So the approach I'm adopting here is I'm just going to explain the things based upon my own memory and what I've learned. I'm not using a particular text in front of me. And actually, this is the approach I've also used back in the monastic university when I teach the young monks, right? So I just teach it out of my own understanding and memory, you know. So that seems to work fine. So in the Buddhist science of the mind, these three terms are, you know, presented, which are considered as, you know, synonymous or synonyms. There's what we call law, I think translated as consciousness, or sometimes as a thought, consciousness, maybe more. Sheba, which is literally translated as knowledge, or to understand. And Rigpa is translated as knower, or to know, or to see. You know, Rigpa in the Tibetan language means, you know, I saw it, or I have seen it, Rigpa. So these are different terms being used, but, you know, in certain sense, these, they mean the same thing, okay? Lo is Sheba, Sheba is Rigpa, and vice versa. In other words, consciousness is knowledge is knower, or the, the seeing, and seeing is knowledge and the consciousness. You know, it's all same.
What the lessons are, Sheba, turn the karasana, session rigpa sukuyoris, session rigpa. Session rigpa sati, session sati, and the turn the ya, and say what the, and jani tikan the ya, and then be rigpa sati jayungu yoris, jijabuyati, shibe tondati, and be a big loto, and say a chiduris, session is chugo jawin, and dish, and shibatang, lol, chukotu yomaris, karasana, and the two letting yoga, and the lotang, shomalos or toto.
Sheba, which I translate at this time as knowledge, or it could be consciousness, is defined as that which is clear, selva, and knowing, rigpa. Okay, that's the definition of what mind is, or what consciousness is, if you will. Now, it's not enough to simply say consciousness is clear, because there are material things which are really clear in their nature. For example, we can say these bulbs which are shining are very clear, and in some sense, I think the Tibetan word, the clear, at this point, I'm thinking maybe it could also mean transparent, it also means illuminative, something that illuminates, right? It could mean luminous too, right? So the mind is luminous, or clear in the sense it's luminous, and knowing, it has the power to know, power to see, you know, things.
What did Tondati and the bed? She bed Tondati by Lotto Seat. Lotto Seat and Tingi is Sung Yoris, or the Lotto Seat, and Mamete Shiva Mayan, but the Lotto Yoris to the Seat.
So the knowing really is added to the definition of mind, so that we can say, we can exclude that, for example, light, electricity, or a butter lamp in our traditional way, it can be luminous, it can illuminate, shine, but it cannot know. It's not a knower. Whereas a mind is not only luminous or clear in that sense, but it's knowing. It can know. So what are the different types of mind? If mind is to be understood as luminous, clear in that sense, and knowing, then what are the different types of mind? If you ask, often we provide these seven types of mind. That is what called ngunsum, direct perception or perceiver. Then there is cheba, inferential perception or indirect perception, perhaps. Then there is the cheshe, subsequent perception, literally translating here. Then there is the yichu, which is translated as mental engagement, literally. Then there is the tesom, doubt. Okay. Then there is the lokshe, distorted or the wrong perception. Then there is the nanglamange. You know, there are certain perceptions where things appear to them, but they do not ascertain them. They do not perceive them. So things which appear to certain perceptions, but they don't recognize or ascertain them. So it's called nangla mangeba. Nangla mangeba. Nangla means something appears to you, but you don't recognize it or ascertain it. Okay? So nangla mangeba. So those are the seven categories. I'll run through the list one more time. There is the what called the ngunsum, which we may say the direct perception, and then there is the inferential perception, then there is the subsequent cheshe perception, there is the yichu, mental engagement, there is the tesom, doubt, there is the nanglamange, something that appears to it, but it doesn't determine or ascertain it, and then there is the lokshe, wrong perception or the distorted perception.
Wa dendra san zan thangbo ta ngusum sa te ke ni ngo un khande chi yara sanas ko ge ani che phi ge lo te ge ngo de tok ba ma yin ba tok ba ta che shin s ani ko che le ko ta le yo yin de tang ma chu ko ko yara s yu la wa de ni lo yin ge tok ba ta che shin ma chu be re gwas de ani ngusum sin de re de yara s
무슨 세맥이지 말 무슨 보내지나
알아 무슨
마티우스
안텔 세마요
So how should we understand direct perception or perceiver munsum? Okay. In the defining characteristic of the, this perception, it says it has to be non-conceptual state of mind. Okay. In other words, it's not a thought. It's not a concept. It is a non-conceptual, you know, state of mind, and unmistaken with regard to its object, matuva. Okay? So it is a non-conceptual state of mind that is unmistaken with regard to its object.
What the talk about the test at the top of the side, the wall, and that top of the tank, and that all the yoris?
Yes.
Oh, top of the hair. It's a matuva signature, and now and then she, now and that, yeah, you did, Korea, Lotte, and it's a tindan, you only you and Tatanga, now at the land, it's a matuva.
So the way actually it is really worded in the Tibetan definition is that direct perception is free of conceptuality. Okay, of course, later on we will talk about what is that, you know, conceptuality or a conceptual state of mind or consciousness. And that it is unmistaken to its object. What kind of object? You see that it is what we call the appearing object. Okay, there are different types of object. Nangyul. Okay. You know, a direct perception is unmistaken with regard to the object that appears to it. In terms of this appearance, appearing object, it is unmistaken.
What the lesson on that? Lo, kanda kai ne rangge ne chi yu lu ju in de chi dang yu de le ne yu ma da wo shi chi ge res. Na yu sung yu, shi yu, juk yu si che yu ma da wo shi. Lo ta ta ba yu lu ju in de zang ga juk se ge yu de la. Ma da wo. 시세 용어 요리스
능 유제 송 유제
신 유제
신 유제
중 유
무슨 말을 듣지 요즘 걸 봐.
나 무슨 말이지 당
러브요나. So we with regard to every what we call perception, we can talk about four different types of object that it deals with, if you will. That is what we call nangyul, literally translated appearing object. Okay. Then there is the sungyul, comprehending object or object that is, you know, comprehended. Then there is the shenyul, which is the object that it is. Well, hopefully we'll explain it. I'll call it a shenyul. Ah, shenyul. That's what I thought. Okay. So it is. So I shouldn't say every perception. That's what the problem is. When we talk about perception, you know, we can talk about four types of objects. There is the appearing object, nangyul. Then there is the comprehending object, or if there's no such English word, there's one, I just made it up. And then there is what called conceptual object, shenyul. And then there is the object of engagement, jugyul, in Tibetan. Yeah.
What the difference on that, okay.
So now we have these four types of object, but every perception really deals with, you know, appearing object, nangyul, and the sungyul, what I translate as the comprehending object. Okay.
Oda, that ne le nangse ngusum le ya.
So with regard to direct perceptions, munsum in Tibetan, I'm using the Tibetan words side by side. So we could talk about appearing object and object of engagement, jugyul, and the comprehending object or the sungyul, but we can't talk about conceptual object, okay, shenyul. The shenyul could only be talked about in terms of what are called conceptual perceptions or conceptual consciousnesses.
What then doesn't that top a lot in the
Whereas in the case of inferential valid cognitions that we talk about, they really have all these four types of objects they deal with. Okay, appearing object, comprehending object, conceptual object, and object of engagement.
So
at this point, maybe you know, many of these things, may kind of fly over your heads or you know ears or whatever faculties we are talking about here. But he thought, you know, maybe of course, all of these things require more studies than the time we have here. So maybe in the future you can look up, you know, sources and learn more about these things. Or maybe in the future we have more time to talk about these things. Okay, but we will try to talk about some as much as we can about this.
Where does the intuition?
Could go with what we call the conceptual states of minds. You know, sometimes those intuitions are also, we may not necessarily related with, you know, the reasonings and the planning that we do, you know, and sometimes we don't remember what we planned everything, but it seems like intuitively we know something's going to happen. You know? So it goes with conceptual, you know, way of thinking or perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we get there, maybe hopefully we will go through, you know, a number of the different types of conceptual, you know, perceptions of consciousnesses. The seven categories of mind, or the types of mind that I laid out, you know, earlier, I think all types of mind, you know, we should be able to bring all types of mind into those seven categories. Okay, so those are, in other words, what are called all-inclusive categories of mind. So as I said, direct perception is defined as free of conceptuality and unmistaken to its object. In this case, object meaning its appearing object. Okay, all direct perceptions are unmistaken with regard to their appearing objects, objects appearing to them.
Okay.
And so all other types of perceptions which are not direct perceptions, they are mistaken with regard to their appearing objects.
Okay.
So which means it's interesting case that there are valid perceptions. In some way, certain valid perceptions are mistaken with regard to their objects. For example, inferential valid perception, cognition, it is mistaken with regard to its appearing object. So if it is mistaken to its appearing object, then how can it be a valid, you know, cognition, if you ask? Well, whether or not a perception is valid or not, we really test it with regard to its engaging object or the object of engagement. So an inferential valid perception, which is called cheba, sema in Tibetan, it is mistaken to its appearing object, but not mistaken to its engaging object, okay, its main object. So therefore, you know, it is a valid perception.
What the dozens are la loche tong ming shibe ni yul chuk tan da tok be ni yul chuk tan de bet ban man da yete res ko.
How non-conceptual perceptions or states of mind approach their objects and how conceptual states of mind approach their objects are very different, you know. So how do they differ in their approach, if you ask, right? And Kishala is using this cup on his table. Let's say, I mean, what we are drinking is hot water. Anyway, it's cold right now. But let's say this is really hot water in the cup. And we kind of reach our cup, and we feel the sensation. Okay, we can feel the sensation directly, isn't it, by touching the cup. Now, when the water has cooled down, then we know we can just, you know, we don't need anything, we don't need to put on gloves to pick up our cup, you know, because it's cooled down. Otherwise, we might need something, you know, to hold on to that. So I'm using this example to illustrate the difference between conceptual perceptions and non-conceptual perceptions, how they approach the objects. In the case of non-conceptual perception, it really perceives its object, what we call directly, or the other term we use is nakedly, as if we can hold our cup directly, and you know, we feel the sensation, right? It's so hot, or it's cold, whatever. It is, there's nothing intermediary in between, you know, in this experience and the object. It's just a direct connect. Okay, we can pick it up, and if it's too hot, we need a glove. So, right. But if we use a glove to pick up the hot cup, then it's really not a direct sensation. What we are feeling is there is something in between, right? There's either we are using a mud or we are using a glove to touch it. In the same way, conceptual perceptions of the consciousnesses, they approach the objects through the intermediary of the image of images of the objects. They do not see the objects directly, just like the non-conceptual perceptions, but they always see it almost through a flame, this image of the object. Okay, there's something in between the consciousnesses and their objects. Is this coming through clearly? Okay.
What in just on that Jingusum gain, you look to down that top where you look to down gain, Monday, which have I yoga the territories. Tangandar lot two in it, and Jingusum da Kandarji, that don't make sure what on top of Shiva Nina to yours.
So that's why when we categorize consciousnesses or the perception into, you know, conceptual perceptions, consciousnesses, and non-conceptual perceptions, then the difference in the way they approach the object is just the way I explained it. The non-conceptual perception consciousnesses, they directly connect with their objects. There is no intermediary, you see. But whereas the conceptual perception consciousnesses, they see their objects through the images of the objects. You know, we call it a generic images, if you will, dunchi in Tibetan. Okay, so we see it through the image. So there's something, although it's maybe subtle, but something there in between the perceptions and their objects. So we said there, you know, there is such thing as direct perceptions or ngunsum, right? But there are four types of direct perceptions here. One is called the Wongbo Ngunsum, sensory direct perceivers of the perceptions. Then there is the Yingun, which is the mental direct perception. Then there is what called the Rangri Ngunsum, the direct perceptions, which are what called the self-perceptions, or the perceiving itself. Okay, something that perceives itself is called a perception, self-knowers, if you will, which are direct perceptions. And then there are what we call literally yogic direct perceptions, something that arises through meditation. I mean, in my footnote, so that you know what the difference is, right? Some kind of perceptions, the direct perceptions, they arise through meditation. So we call them yogic direct perceptions. So the, you see, boy, we are getting very technical today, huh? Very advanced levels.
Of
course, there are differences between sensory perceptions, direct perceptions, and the mental direct perceptions. The difference between sensory perceptions and mental perceptions, one of the main differences is they rely upon different, what we call the fundamental conditioning factors, which are basically their faculties. The sensory perceptions are very much dependent on sense faculties, right? Without them, they can't arise, so they can't do anything. Whereas the mental direct perception depends upon, you know, mental faculty, which is its fundamental conditioning factor called dakin in Tibetan.
Well, then just on that,
So we are talking about the things which we all of us experience and we have, you know. When we talk about sensory direct perceivers or the perception, there are five of them, and all of us experience this. You know, there is what we call the visual direct perception, if you will. Then we have the auditory, you know, direct perception. Then we have the olfactory or the nose direct perception. That may be easy to say. Then we have the tongue, you know. Conscious direct perception. Then we have the tactile or the body direct perception. So these we all experience, you know, in our life. So let's take a visual consciousness apprehending a form. And so in this particular case, the object or the focus is a form, right? It's a visual consciousness, is the form. And this consciousness could only arise relying upon its fundamental conditioning factor, which is the eye sense faculty in this case. And we already said before that visual direct perception is clear, it is free of conceptuality and unmistaken to its object, right? So this consciousness, this perception has to be unmistaken towards its appearing object. I think the way eye consciousness or the visual direct perception sees its object, let's say a form, is first, I think, the form reflects on the eye sense faculty. And then the eye sense faculty sends the information as if to the visual consciousness or the eye consciousness, and then it sees it. Yeah. So this is just like when we look in the mirror, right? Our body or the face, whatever it is we are trying to see here, is reflected into the mirror, and then what we are seeing is what's reflected in the mirror, right? It's the same way that I think the visible forms, they reflect on the eye sense faculty, and then eye sense faculty informs the eye consciousness, so to speak, then it sees its objects. So the sense faculties are very different from each other. You know, for example, the visual, the eye sense faculty is not the same as the ear sense faculty, as we can see. In the Buddhist literature, there's mention of the eye sense faculty refers to this like a very clear matter inside the eye. And so it's a very subtle form, but it's a very clear matter. Yeah, that can receive the reflection, of objects. So Geshe-la is wondering whether that could be the pupil inside here. Of course, the Buddhist text doesn't say it's the pupil, right? Exactly. But he's wondering whether that's the case. You know, it's reflecting on that. So I think there's what he feels is because it's not clearly explained in it, Buddhist text, that really there's not so much anything we can do, surgery and kind of do anything with this clear matter we call the eye sense faculty. You know, the surgery levels are like at different levels. Maybe if there's a cataract, we can remove it. If the cataract is covering that, you know, maybe we can remove that one. Okay, but that clear matter is somewhere inside the eye, you know, and that is the fundamental conditioning factor here for eye consciousness.
Well, then just some zanti. That's something always, ongbo anje ongbo. Nung yen ane something always in the test. That people conditioning me yungbi. Kese ke ni kyu.
And the point we are trying to make here is, even in the case of a visual perception consciousness, it could arise relying upon certain conditions or factors. And the factors include, it has to have a visible form, right, without which it can arise. It must also have its a sense faculty intact, that clear matter we are talking about, which is the fundamental conditioning factor, right? So only when these things come together, then visual perceptions could, you know, arise. So that clear matter, which is inside the eye, which is regarded as the eye sense faculty, very fundamental condition for the visual consciousness, it has what we call a limitation. Means it has its own limitation. That is to say that what is within its parameters, it could see. For example, we cannot see what is behind these walls. Okay, because it's its own limitation as well. We cannot see what is behind the walls, Because the matter has its own limit in certain things. So if it is not a clear matter, let's say it is not a matter, it's some kind of fine, then we may be able to see things behind, these walls of, somewhere at a great distance. Because it's a matter, it has its own limitations. It's obstructed by other things that we cannot see through the walls. So the next is what is called the auditory direct perception or the ear consciousness. And of course, its focused object is the sound. That's what it perceives, it hears. And its fundamental conditioning factor is the ear sense faculty. In the Buddhist texts such as the Treasure of Knowledge, it is described that that faculty is described something like the husk of a wheat. You know, it's the same similar kind of a shape and everything. That's what's stated in the Buddhist literature. It's just that faculty is described like a husk of a wheat grain.
What does that
Okay, now what I'm trying to do is I'm really not going into too much detail, then we will never be able to talk too much about the states of mind. For example, when we talk about the visible forms, we can talk about 20 categories of visible forms, okay? If we start like that, then we will never get anywhere. Yeah, so I'm just skipping all that. But I just simply want to say there are many different types of visible forms,
And then
in the case of the sounds, in the Buddhist literature, they talk about 8 different types of sound, or the categories of sound. So all of these, the detailed explanation about these things are presented by the great Indian Buddhist sage scholar Vasubandhu in his Treasure of Knowledge. Okay, treasure of knowledge. I think it's available in English and maybe other languages.
That then, any Tinsi, Tinsi Ongwaris, or Tinsi Ongwa, any Yuda, and Chiaga Yudi, Chiri de Yoris, Chicha, and the Dagenti, and Jig Naya, and Ongwal Dene, and you, and Zenyuchi, and Tonzo, and Yong Yad, Shen Yad, the Dirus.
So now the same thing goes for the olfactory direct perception of consciousness or the nose consciousness. Of course, the nose consciousness deals with smell as its object, and the nose sense faculty is its fundamental conditioning factor.
What did she the chile number mandawa and 2 years? 2 years and sitting again, sheba tense omo mandawa two.
And then there is a mention of 6 different types of smell in Buddhist literatures.
That is rejecting the ongres, rejecting the ongu yuti, and reject your rejecture, the yores, and tea tagging it up, be a tensor on body, be a luke on body, the yores, tagging you one.
Reject you the orsome,
King. La, you did that, jump down,
Then there is the tactile or body. You know, consciousness, and deals with the touch and the textures, like a rough, smooth, you know, and all of that. And it is based upon what are called the body, you know, faculty, which is the fundamental conditioning factor here.
Luke Ombote, which is on a convertible to Luke Ombote, Telekatayanzan, Densa Telekatayanzan, Harshiva Telekatayan.
It is said that the tactile sense faculty, it really pervades from the crown of our head to the bottom of our feet. It covers the whole body. Okay.
Oh, then just on that, the Ombote Dalla, Ombungao de Dagis, and she, you to do, you to chain to Zanga, and she figure on a ship. That Lugo Ombota da, Uni, Chequin, and the Lucy, the Jerry Yoris, Chen, you Chen, it's in where. And the name Jig Shiva, Jishi, you Chequ, we are Chen Mondo, and Shiva to get to your mothers, Jig Ombudi Tagade, Jig Zilia, and Dawa, Sisung Dawan, and she are the Sukutus, Pijana,
Sisung
Dawan, Jig Zilamato, Ombudi, Jina Lolio, your Samaristi.
So we almost forgot our tongue consciousness perception. So interestingly, it is described that the tongue, the sense faculty, if you will, is right at the what we call the tip of the tongue. And in Buddhist literature, it's described like the moon, the third day moon, the lunar calendar, I think, is kind of crescent, you know, thing, but on the tip of the tongue. So what we were giggling about was if you put your candy too much inside, you won't taste it. It has to be, you know, there on the edge of the tongue. And of course, the tongue consciousness and the body consciousness, they could only arise when we really come into contact with their objects, right? The tongue has to touch the food or whatever you're tasting. The body, tactile consciousness, has to touch its object so that we experience it.
What the you term when you get yaga is you tatar and wound the carrion and that's a good ombul term when you get yaga, she what it, and we go ombul down and it's a big and that nail ombul and tea. What it? You tell me to see in your pattern when you call salt to your delicious. Then you see them just singing if you tell what those they own with them.
So, out of the 5 sensory perceptions of the consciousness, sometimes we use the same those words, you know, the visual consciousness, olfactory consciousness, and auditory consciousnesses, you know, they really do not have to come in kind of in, you know, close touch with their objects, right? You can stand here and smell things that is right all the way up, you know, somewhere else, or hear the sound that is made somewhere else, further away, and all of that. But the tactile consciousness and the tongue consciousness, they really have to come in close touch with their objects so that we have the experiences.
What then just that chi yu su jing wo su da chi ro je jia sheng a yu wen na xin ti yu de jing ge ni xie wo men zhao nga de le is da dong da.
So that's why, in other words, what we're talking about is there are 5 sensual objects, right? Form, sound, smell, you know, taste and touch. So then there are perceptions of consciousnesses, you know, that deal with these, you know, sensual objects. So that's how we experience them. So we'll stop there for our lunch break. Okay. To what extent do you say?
Last room.
Sure. Oh, could you say it a little loudly? I didn't catch the second one.
Second one is ego, the super ego.
Oh, the Freudian thing. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know whether he, you know, I mean, I will be able to translate that into Tibetan, but he won't have any clue about that. But I'll try the first one. Okay. Just to be fair, I need to make that footnote or whatever, end note. Kulang chiwa nyitang da chawa thangpo te dhiri siya ane nangbe chwe ki simgi namsha nang liya ane lo rwa chi dhinde dhwa dhaka so lo liya me thara shen kashi nga rang so ki tenbe ki ma simba dhine rwa ha mogo ma ma che rwa tuan dhinde shik rwa so ta chi kyebe nengam dhine rwa. The answer to the first one is yes, in the Buddhist you know, science of the mind, they talk about different levels of consciousness. Some are very evident, some are like a what we call a subtle level, an unconscious state of mind that we really don't know. So we do talk about, you know, different types of those mind. The one chiwa nyiba di again dhinde dhishan ganzu pezi ladu. I think the second one I can't do justice. I can't translate in Tibetan those words, okay? I kind of know what it is. I must have read it 10,000 years ago somewhere, but, you know. So, you have to share me the Quran's fraud and psychology. So, it is your translator's limitation. Yes. Which we accept. Yeah, one more.
Since our connections to our faculties are somewhat change over time, mm-hmm. or say some people are born blind or deaf or something like that, mm-hmm. Is it possible to understand these faculties in a more general sense, mm-hmm. To understand their perception in a general sense than mm-hmm. to use a specific faculty?
I'm still not clear with what the point you're trying to make. I do, you know, hear you. Yeah.
Say, like, for a blind person, how would you understand mm-hmm. the sight faculties mm-hmm. or perception?
Okay.
For how would you describe that?
I think the question that's being asked is about, you know, how the sense perceptions of the consciousness are very much dependent on the sense faculties or the powers. And the question is that our faculties could, you know, change, you know, due to circumstances, things like that. You know, there are, you know, we may have defective sense faculties. You know, for example, the example given is, let's say, in the case of someone, you know, who can't see. So what can we say about that sense faculty and, you know, the dealing with the objects? Okay, indeed, the one. Tagi ongbo shaba dige di ane ta so so chira ongbo tingi che ro wa ina nga zo ongbo la ta pa zo gyuwa de ne gyu sho ba de ne yungo ro wa pe na ta mi long ga ba chi na an de gi ko ta mi wa la ya gyu sho de ne ro wa din de zo ko su thong do ba din de khar chi gor so da
la ta te nga zo nang ba chi ne sha na ji su ta kyu ne me ngyo ge ta ongbo ri gyu sho an de na mi ngi de bu zi gi yo des na mi ngi de bu sa de ta chi tom ne wa de zo ya so chi ga ne de res ko ta bo you call the center with her and me but my daughter she can do so that the mega ton and shop to them the channel me to use the amigo on book or on the social but that you don't know what was
weird and on the
meanwhile yes so just like it's a key one subject and what me was on the couple of subjects on the
somebody in the meanwhile
that you want to know so that delicate and a bit in the middle channel you
the way we understand something relating to what you have asked in the Buddhist literature is that, I mean, is it possible that, for example, there could be certain impediments, you know, that could be treated through surgery or whatever the case may be? So in which case, somebody who thought he was a blind or she was a blind could now see things clearly. So that means that the real eye sense faculty, the clear matter we're talking about, is not defective. So the other things in which prevented the person from seeing things. So which means, you know, something can be done to change that effect. But if there is a defect to the clear that matter we talked about, this factor, then it's not possible to treat that. And the way Buddhists understand or explain that is, that may have something to do with the ripening result of your karma, you know, from the past. That so there's nothing that can be done, you just have to accept it. And in this case, I mean, you cannot see visible forms. Does that kind of answer your question, slide?
My question was then, how do you understand or perceive, how do they describe this kind of perception?
How do the blind people describe their perception? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah. How do you describe from the Buddhist sense for those who can't?
Are there any... the question is, how do Buddhists explain how the blind people experience the forms? How do we explain that? That's your question, right? Okay. Dile chebi na ta tan da nang bu shun e chebi na ta ben a long wa ru chao ru wa ge long ba ge thong ge me bi ne kurang zu ge ta pon zhe na su de nyong nyong zo jin go se do su ge nyong zo a di da wo de kan de se jie bu go ru so da long wa ge ta su de de su sa me ta ga zhe ne da la ge cha jin nyong zo jin me ta nyong zo de kan de se jie go ru se
te xia de xora ne da xora ge nang ge pa ne ne ji su su nam sha jin de che le ge nang
cha ji le de nyong me che
le ge pa ne de yo de so so namsha gyendo pena chig longoji yena ngara ani chig so so khangba de na la an tonyong wa tang kwa tang ki chung khane ton ba sanje to so kwa chug yema ti sing yu yena an khola lang ga te mon sa cha chwa che de nyong ha thone ne khola ki nyam nyong nyong ha
thone ne chi da ti ji la ten ro
sta che tang to bo ka tan ne de to ko wa re
in the Buddhist explanation, from Buddhist perspective, what we could say about such a situation is that, let's say, you know, someone becomes a blind at a later time, okay? So he or she has a sense of the environment or the house, you know, where things are, with the door, with the window, whatever the case may be. So now later you are blind, so you cannot see things, but you could still function in the sense that based upon your memory, what's stored in your mind, we call it the generic images that you are able to experience, and you're able to function, you know, these things. So that's like something you remember where the door is, where things are kept, or something that people mention it to you through the sound image, that you can experience the forms in which they are. But now you can't see them. Does that now become a little better? Okay. Okay. All right, so we will stop there and go for lunch and back at 2 to 4.
Oh,